So many people are like, well, how am I going to find that tribe? And how am I going to do this? Sometimes it's as simple as saying yes to something that you really just didn't want to do. And a relationship is born. A new path is hedged. You can't explain it. It's a divine destiny of some sort. But it's a matter of just being open and saying yes to some opportunities that you most likely are way more comfortable saying no in.
It's saying yes to different.
Different.
This is the Own It Show, where we tell stories of how everyday people made ownership theirs.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Own It Show. I'm your host, Justin Rothling-Schofer. And if you guys are new here, the Own It Show is all about telling stories of people who have taken ownership of their lives and have realized the success that comes with that. And by success, we don't mean monetary. By success, we mean living different. And we know that different is ultimately what allows us to tap into our God-given talents and treasures and realize them to other people. And so take a look back. This is episode 277. And so there's a lot of great content, both of just me, but then amazing guests for you to lean in on. And if this does serve you, be sure to like it, be sure to share it, leave a five-star review, because that is how we reach more people. No matter whether you're listening in a car, working out, going for a walk, take a screenshot, tag us. We love to engage with you guys on social media as well. Today's guest, I could not be more excited to share with you guys. This is a man that lives in integrity. It's a man that lives what he preaches. It's a man who lives in service, but it's also a man that knows what ownership is about, because he knows what life outside of ownership looks like. He knows what a life that isn't in integrity looks like, and has been able to learn for himself how to build this into a day-to-day practice and discipline that ultimately has allowed him to realize a life that, quite frankly, I don't think he at one point thought he would ever be able to realize. And the unique part about this is now he's helping other people do that as well. And so, Adam Jablin, it is a pleasure to have you on the Own It Show. Thank you for taking time.
Oh, dude, I'm excited. And I don't know if your guests know the significance of the number 7 for you, but for the fact that I'm on 277, I couldn't be happier. It was meant to be.
It was meant to be. What Adam is referring to is there's been a lot of sevens come up in my life lately, and it's a very spiritual number for me in terms of completeness and solidarity. And the Lord speaks to me in numbers, and so it is not by chance that 277 is with you.
Amen. Amen.
I'd love for you just to kind of lean into our audience a little bit and to kind of give them a little bit of your background, because you guys that don't know Adam would see this guy on Instagram now, rubbing shoulders with Tony Robbins, working with some of the biggest names in entertainment. And you're like, oh man, this guy's got it going on. This guy's just, he's got a beautiful, beautiful girlfriend. He's just in an amazing place of life. He's got a beautiful family. And the guy's ripped out of his mind. He's like, you know what? Just everything's great, but you don't know the roads and the valleys and the hardships that he had to overcome in order to get there. And so I'd love if you just shed a little bit of light on what that looked like and the lessons that were kind of brought on there.
I'd love to, and I'll try to make it short and sweet so it doesn't get too long for that. Growing up in Tenafly, New Jersey, I was the fat kid. I was the heavy kid. My dad called me El Chubbo, not meaning to hurt me. It was, you know, it's a kid in the 80s. There was a movie out called The Goonies, and this kid would do the chunk shuffle, and my friends would ask me to do the chunk shuffle. And I always felt insecure about my weight and how I looked, which created a very extroverted, charismatic, laugh with me instead of laugh at me personality. And moved to Boca Raton, Florida when I was around 11 years old. And 11 years old. And you could have your shirt off every day here, and you could be at the beach every day here. And I hated it. I was sweating all the time because of my weight, and, you know, which made me now my hormones are kicking in. So I'm smelling. I remember a girl teasing me that I smell, and I had had deodorant yet, and I would wear a shirt in the pool and it sucked to me. And so I thought I was hiding my fat, but it was worse. And I just made a decision with my mom's help, believe it or not, that I can't look like this anymore. I can't be like this anymore. And my idea was like Sylvester Stallone in Rocky III, like it just shredded. And the thought was, Justin, if I could look like that, all my problems would go away. That's what I really believed. And in 4 short years, my mom would buy me Flex Magazine, Muscle and Fitness, Arnold Schwarzenegger's Encyclopedia of Bodybuilding. I didn't really know much about nutrition, but I knew grilled chicken and an apple was better than the 6-piece chicken McNuggets I was eating with fries and Coke from McDonald's. Very monotonous, overtraining like crazy. By the way, if anyone's heard your story, nothing like yours, nothing even remotely like yours. As a matter of fact, mine compared to yours is like Snow White, but still
there's no comparisons here. No comparisons.
Still overtraining, you know, 3 hours a day, rep after rep after rep. And in 4 short years, I went from being the best built, the fattest kid in the class to the best built kid in the class. You know, I went from people going, "Hey, Adam, how many Oreos did you eat last night?" to, "Yo, man, how much can you bench press?" And the girls liked me. But with the skill set and the body, I was able to hang out with the older kids. And the older kids were experimenting with alcohol and drugs. Justin, there was no peer pressure. I mean, granted, the only thing I would say was considered pressure was when you're a young kid, when you're younger and you're hanging with older kids, they just seem cooler because they have more freedom and they're doing more and they're that much closer to college or wherever your head goes. They have more testosterone. They're more developed. They just look, they're just cooler. And I just remember them passing a beer or passing a drink and me drinking and Justin, it fixed something inside of me that I didn't know was broke. It fixed it. And now my insides matched my outsides at the same time as me finding this beautiful experiment of what makes me feel good. My father, who is amazing in a business, his business takes off. And my mother and my father asked me if I would one day want to take over the family business. My people-pleasing skills were at a 10. Honestly, Justin, the only thing I was thinking of is having sex with my girlfriend or the new pair of Jordans. That was probably the highest level of thinking. And I was like, yeah, of course, because I grew up in Jersey and now I saw this life in Boca Raton and things were different. You know, my mom had a blue Buick. My dad had a station wagon. Now my dad's got a black BMW. My mom's got a Lexus. There's a pool in the backyard. I got a taste. And of course I would. So my future was written for me. I'm the first one in my high school with a fake driver's license, which was from Iowa. It was terrible. I'm also, but it worked. I go to Arizona State University because Playboy and Penthouse said it was the number one party school, which it was, and I dominated there. And it was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And it was always keeping up the image and the body and drinking and the women and the, you know, and having, but I was having fun. I was having fun. And I go to, you know, 4 short years, I go to the family business and it was no joke. It was not like, oh, here comes the heir apparent. It was, you're the first one there, the last one to leave. You start as a janitor. You have to work all departments in this business, from quality control to mechanic to yarn inventory to design team to secretary. You had to work every department because you're the boss's son.
And tell people what that business was.
It was, so we were, I say this with pride more for my family than myself, but we were the number one lace manufacturing business in the world. So Hanky Panky Lace, Victoria's Secrets, La Perla, Hanes brand, you name it, it came out of us. It was thriving. It was a beautiful, beautiful business. Wasn't my dream, but it was a beautiful business. And look, it was a work hard, play hard mentality, Justin. That's really what it was. I knew that I wasn't living my dream, but at the same time, not that I even had a dream. I never even dared to dream, but I knew that people would kill to be in my position, which made me feel a tremendous amount of guilt, which made me work even harder and which made me more successful. And the more successful I was, the more I felt myself stuck there. You can't leave that. And it's my family. It was this ongoing. And this drinking and the pills and the drugging. And it was an everyday thing, man. It was an everyday thing. So an example would be 5 a.m. or 4:30 a.m. wake up, have coffee and 50 milligrams of ephedrine. go sweat out the night before. After around 6 o'clock, 5:45, whatever, have a couple of Xanax to bring my heart rate down and play with the kid, blah, blah, and get to work. At work, I'm living on nothing but bodybuilding supplements because my stomach can't take it from, you know, I'm Pepcid AC, and I'm taking Xanax and coffee throughout the day to keep me like mellow. Then at 12 o'clock, I run out and I do 1 minute. I apologize to my daughter. 1 second. I apologize. Okay. Only thing I would do that for is my daughter. I would run out at noon and do a quick workout. I would take something like No Explode or Jack 3D, which would just send me all the way through, you know, my blood pressure through the roof, train, take another couple of Xanax. Finally, when 5:30, 6 p.m. rolls around, I start sneaking the alcohol on the way home, whack back a six pack of Coors Light, rinse my mouth out with soap, take a little more ephedrine to get like life back in me, take care of the kid, blah, 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 wait for my ex-wife and my daughter to go to bed. And then when they were finally in bed, I can drink the way I want. Because you can, and just wine, tequila, calling old friends, and then go to pass out maybe around 11:30, wake up at 4:45 a.m. and do the whole thing over and over and over again until my body and my mind and my spirit just got sick.
I want to kind of dive into the component where you actually started to realize the detriments of this.
It's a great question. I knew something was wrong. I knew something was off. Justin, if you told me I was an alcoholic and an addict, I'd laugh my ass off because of the definitions I had. So an alcoholic is an unshaved bum in the middle of Manhattan, muttering to himself with a brown paper bag, petting a cat that's not there. You know, that's an alcoholic. An addict was like Chris Rock, Pookie in New Jack City, just smoking, you know, crack all day. Like, these were my definitions. So, I mean, did you want to say I partied hard or I was a heavy boozer? Sure, I'll give you that. But alcoholic and addict, I couldn't sign up for that. But the consequences kept coming. The consequences. What do consequences look like? You know, in college, what I didn't mention was I got a DUI. At home, I drove through more mailboxes than I'd like to, let you know. My ex-wife and I would fight all the time with my drink. All the time. I wasn't clear-headed. I was miserable. My physical well-being. Like, I just remember popping Pepcid ACs like they were Tic Tacs. I knew something was wrong, Justin. I just didn't know what. And I thought it was my happiness, not my drinking and drugging. I thought if I could just get happy, if I could just get peaceful and content, I won't behave like this anymore. So alcoholism and addiction it takes four things to be qualified as a disease, which is going to make me sound really intelligent, but I'm not, right? The four things you need to be diagnosed as a disease is you have to be primary, not secondary. So primary, the first thing, you have to be chronic, always there. Progressive, over time it gets worse, and fatal. Those are the four things. Well, it's primary. I thought, oh, if you get me happy, which would be secondary, I would stop the first thing, which is not the case. So I was just stuck in this awful cycle, Justin. Awful cycle.
It's really unique when you talk about this because a lot of our audience being entrepreneurs, business owners, I think a lot of us can relate to this component of I can be happy when. I can be happy when I get that house. I can be happy when I get that promotion. I can be happy when my business hits $1 million. I can be happy when my kid graduates college. I can be happy when I get married. I can be happy when, rather than figuring out how to fill that God-sized hole that lives inside of you that you're trying to, that you're just literally trying to sedate with something else. And it's knowing your story and knowing where you've gone and what you've come through, how were you able to, or what was the breaking point for you that took you from this slow level of destruction to, I guess what you could say is rock bottom, but almost a trampoline that then catapulted you into this new state of ownership and really, and I'll kind of set you up for this, but taking your life and creating this alter ego, this hero effect in yourself to now go out and live the life that God designed you to.
Yeah. Well, it was my intervention. I love the way you speak because we have the same thoughts and philosophies in life. But at the time, Justin, and I don't say this proudly, I would mock the idea of God. Like, I was like people that believed in God, I just would roll my eyes at them, you know, like, oh, like it's Tinkerbell. And if you wish a happy thought, he'll sprinkle some fairy dust on you and you'll fly. Like, I just mocked. Yeah. When my favorite athlete caught a touchdown in the end zone and thank God, I was like, really? You're the one that ran that route 500 reps. And you think, how come you didn't thank God when you got intercepted? I was so cynical, which was great because the wall that I built up was so thick and so wide that if the power could get through that, it made me a believer.
Mm.
So it was the best thing that ever happened to me, being that cynical towards God. When I got intervened, I got an intervention, I surrender and I go to rehab. I had this idea, Justin, that I was going to be the most dedicated, determined, disciplined rehab patient they've ever seen. And they're going to see in a few short days, there's nothing wrong with this guy. This guy is an animal. It must be the father, the mother, the ex-wife, the family business. It can't be this guy. And so I attacked everything. I attacked the Justin, and everything they were teaching me made sense and backfired on me. I remember them teaching me day two about healthy spirituality versus unhealthy spirituality. I didn't even know spirituality could be unhealthy. Them explaining that spirituality is like muscles. So you can't get more spiritual. So Justin and Adam, we both keep ourselves in great shape, but you can't get more muscles, right? You can make what God gave you, the blessing of what we have, you can make it bigger, faster, stronger, healthier, more full, but you can't get more of it. You know, you can't put another arm on it. Well, our spirituality is the same way. What God gave you is enough. Now you can make it bigger, healthier, stronger, more sound, more full, more rich, but you can't get more of it. You know, and I loved that. And he said, you can see healthy spirituality versus unhealthy spirituality. Healthy spirituality, it's two guys like us. You find your words quickly. There's a celebration behind your eyes. You're happy to be alive. You enjoy being a part of the human race and helping another soul. It's a very healthy way to live. Unhealthy spirituality you can see from a mile away. There's a lot of, there's kind of like a darkness behind the person. They're looking down a lot. You almost feel like everything's a lie. And at that point, I was unhealthy spiritual. So I ran and saw this guy as fast as I could. And his name was Father Ron Bersha. And he was a Catholic priest. And I'm a Jew from Jersey. And we have this beautiful meeting. And Justin, this is where it all began. He asked me to put my arm out. And he went like this with his hand. And he put his fingers on me. And he points to my arm. He goes, Adam, do you see what I did there? So I'm looking at my arm. I'm looking at the father. I'm like, I'm sorry. I don't know. He does it again. He goes, you see what I did that time? You know, just now I'm using humor because I'm very uncomfortable. I'm like, hey, father, I'm Jewish. There may be some disconnect with us. You know, he starts laughing. He does it again. He goes, you see what I did this time? Now I don't even know what to say. I'm like, father, I heard you guys were little boys. Okay. And he turns the lights off and he puts a UV light on my arm. And there are all of his fingerprints glowing. And he goes, Adam, do you think that you can maybe believe in a power that's been all around you that you can't see, taste, touch, hear, none of the five basic senses that's been all around you, guiding you, protecting you, and brought you here to me now? And I'm watching these fingerprints glow, Justin. And I'm like, father, I can believe. And he turned the lights back on and they disappeared. And I thought it was like magic. You know, I'm like, do it again, right? And this Catholic priest downloaded this Jew from Jersey into the matrix where I was finally open. I was open. I was open to read spiritual literature. I was open to read the New Testament. I'm Jewish. We stick with the old. I was open to read the New Testament and make my own decision if Jesus was the Messiah. I was open to understand all these religious philosophies and terms. I was open for the first time, Justin. Do you know what I mean? It was insane. And I had to tell my story to these 35 alcoholic addict guys in the middle of rehab. And I tell them everything I just told you, from being the fat kid to Tenafly, New Jersey, to Boca Raton, Florida, to, you know, becoming built and, you know, Arizona State University and partying like a maniac. And these 35 guys start standing up and applauding and woo at it. And I'm like, oh no, this is not good. And I thought this was not good because they identified with me. They could relate with me, which means I'm not special, which means I'm going to have to stay. And that night, Justin, I had the worst panic attack of my life, which now I know point blank from speaking to therapists, knowing intuitively myself, but that was my spiritual awakening. That was my moment. And I went to the nurse's station and my blood pressure was well over 180 something, right? I was freaking out, Justin. And they're like, what's wrong? I'm like, I think I have to stay. And they're like, so what's wrong with that? I'm like, well, I told my family I was going to be out in 10 days and blah, blah. They're like, just call them. So like a good alcoholic addict, I run to the phone. I call my ex-wife, at the time, my wife. And I'm like, are you awake? And she's like, no, it's 4:30 a.m. You woke me up. You woke the baby up. What's wrong? She doesn't know what's going on in rehab. You know, she thinks I got stabbed or something. And I'm like, listen, I got really bad news. And she's like, what? I'm like, I'm an alcoholic and an addict and I have to stay. And there was dead silence, Justin, dead. And then all of a sudden I heard this laughing. Like, we were always going to keep you there. We were always, don't you see, it's you, Adam. It's Adam this and Adam that. Adam has to run the family business. And Adam needs the Patron tequila. And Adam needs to work out at this time. And Adam needs to do his ephedrine and coffee. And Adam. And Justin, something happened to me very similar to what you had shared with me once in your childhood. But I had something called the parallel process. It's where you see two of you. Very, very clear. It's very difficult to describe to anyone that's never experienced it. But you see these choices almost like holograms in a movie. And there was one guy that got on the back on the phone and was like, listen, bitch, pack the car, move my shit, like get the divorce papers ready. Just this, I'm right, you're wrong, screw you, angry, upset, frustrated, alcoholic addict. And then in this other one, Justin, I didn't know if this guy had to be baptized. I didn't know if he had to wear a yarmulke. I didn't know if he had to make a vow of poverty. I didn't know anything about this guy, but I knew he was sober. And I jumped in with both feet and I never looked back. And I became teachable for the first time.
Hmm.
And that's what happened.
It's so unique when you say you became teachable, because I've been doing this for 277 episodes. And something everybody has said is, the moment they become teachable, the moment they become coachable, the moment they sought learning beyond their current state of understanding was the moment that life changed. And so it's something that all these people of success have in common. It's something that each one of these principles and disciplines that comes into space is, it's one, faith that where you're at and listening to your calling and what's being put on you is for a reason. But two, it's being coachable for the people that have come into your environment, coachable by the people that are wanting to pour into you and allowing their giftings, their callings, their promptings to ultimately be your blessings, your miracles that you need at that time to be able to create that new realization, that new reality, that new life that you've been seeking, searching, and looking for so long. So I love how you said that. That's so beautiful. Would you kind of go to say that, kind of jumping into that with 2 feet into that new person, that new Adam, was really for the first time that you started betting on yourself?
Absolutely. It was the first time that I started becoming Adam.
Mm.
By the way, with what you just said, I just also want to say there's a reason that I love you so much and that I can't wait to have our private conversations, because of what you just shared is how I feel about you. When you see somebody opening up to their gifts, even though you know your gifts, but now on a different level, it is exciting. It's contagious. You want to support the person. You want to be behind the person. For me, the way I'm wired, because I'm sensitive and emotional, to watch someone else thrive is the best. It's a turn on. You know, I was already the number one lace manufacturer. I had the spotlight on me enough. Yeah, it's great. Wonderful. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. But when you get to see someone else do it, oh, dude, I relate way more with Phil Jackson than Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. I love watching it. I love it.
It's amazing. It's a really good analogy, because I firmly believe that we were all built to be Phil Jacksons. And what I mean by that is Phil Jackson was the best at what he did, world class. And guess what? Each and every one of us is meant to be world-class at something as well. We just don't know what that is yet. And a lot of us aren't willing to surrender and listen to the promptings of what that is. For you, you weren't meant to be the world-class lace guy. That was your family's doing. That was your dad's. That just kind of came upon you. And because of that, it ultimately came with all of these other things that you had to go through to get you to a point where you were able to lean in and bet on yourself and listen to the calling of to be the Adam that you need to do today so that you could now go and touch the thousands of people that you do on their journey, getting them out of this state of addiction, this state of just immortality that's keeping them small and out of their God-given gifts. And you now taking on that role of Phil Jackson as a teacher, as a leader, and helping them be coachable, because you're right. And I love this in Revelations, that we will overcome by the blood of the Lamb and the word of your testimony. And when you have a testimony that other people can relate to, you win. If you have a 1 in 1 million story, how many people are you going to relate to? 1 in 1 million. If you have a household story, now who are you going to relate to?
Yeah.
And that goes and just shows the impact that you can ultimately create and what you've done.
Is it okay, real fast, also if I talk about our faith together, which, by the way, I'm not trying to pull anyone towards us or push anyone away from us. I just like to open that dialogue a little bit, because, I was bar mitzvahed. I love the Jewish faith. It's very rich. It's very whole. It was Jesus's faith. It was Jesus's faith. However, in my opinion, not looking at the New Testament and who Jesus was is like watching Star Wars, the first one, and then not watching the second movie to realize that Darth Vader is Luke's father. So you're missing like a really big part of it. And, you know, I'm very open with people. I call myself a full Jew. I've been baptized. And what that means is I got to finally, now that my mind was open, Justin, I got to read these things and make a decision for myself. Not everyone telling me what I am and what I believe. And I'm going to say this in a very New Jersey kind of wet, Rocky Balboa. But basically in the Torah, in the Old Testament, you kind of have two choices. The Messiah is going to be this, if you don't mind me saying, like a Donald Trump kind of politician with power and flames behind him that will make Israel the holy number one state of the world, or it is the Lamb of God, a man that will take away the sins of the world and give freedom to God's people. And there are your choices. So if you want to go religiously, I had a choice ahead of me. To me, it was very clear. Like it was just very clear. It was very easy to see. So that's where my faith developed.
And I think it's so unique as you come around to this is, and I've said this often, is I hate religion, but I love Jesus. And it's really all about the relationship that you develop. And Rich Wilkerson, my spiritual mentor down here in Miami, built his ministry through VU. And something he often talks about is that faith doesn't really become something you gravitate to or that you hold on to until it becomes personal to you, until you develop that personal relationship with Jesus. And it can be very confusing and like trying to figure out like the way in which everything kind of works and the way everything kind of connects. And just like anything in this world, anything that you don't understand, you kind of shy away from it. Like, I don't really want to lean into that. But when you can, but you know inside, just like you've said, there's this feeling that continues to come back. It can be communicated as like, I just have this massive passion for something, or I have I just feel like I should go this route or this direction, or I'm in a place and I see so clearly, go take a left here or take a right here. And there are moments without us even knowing that God is speaking to us and helping to direct these paths, because all things happen for good. All things happen for us. All things happen in pursuit of what we've been put on this earth for. It's whether we have the obedience and the development, being coachable, being teachable, to lean into that, to realize those promises that exist. And that's exactly what you've been able to do.
Maybe with like even what's going on with you. Remember, I asked you to do this on IG Live, and maybe the courage to say this is happening.
Yeah.
You know, because some people can look at, you know, people are gonna look at you and I like, oh, okay. But it takes courage to stand up of what you're really experiencing and how these gifts are unfolding in you, which is one of the reasons I love you. I love you. You know, it's really easy to downplay it. You know, it's really easy not to live up to our potential and just kind of get along with everybody.
Yeah.
To say what you're really experiencing, which is not my place to, but to say, you know, is It's what it's all about. That's true humility. It's true humility to show God's real power and grace. Like, so when Michael Jordan wins the game or Tiger Woods hits a putt on the 18th hole and wins it, and they ask him, how did you make that putt? Oh my God, no, the wind was, you know, he doesn't go, oh gee, shucks. Well, you know, I practiced that shot 10 million times since I was a little boy with my dad. He shows God's grace through him. You know, Michael, how did you do that? I practice harder than anybody there is in the world. You know, Justin, how is this happening to you? I've been doing this ever since I was a little boy. I just didn't know what it was.
Yeah.
But it takes courage.
It does. And I also use this acronym is, that's why I kind of asked you. I said, did you feel like that was the first time that you bet on yourself?
100%.
And I use this acronym for bet, because God bet on us a long, long time ago. There's one in 40 trillion chances that we would be born. So the fact that we're born, we've already won. We've already, as soon as you come into this world, you've already won, because your destiny has already been predetermined. It's just how obedient and how much are we willing to bet on ourselves. God has already bet on you with your blessings, your energy, and your time. BET, that's your bet.
I love that, Justin.
It's the moment that you, as an individual, take ownership for that same bet that God made on you to lean into your calling, to now say, hey, I'm going to take my blessings, I'm going to take my energy, and I'm going to take my testimony and lean in and ultimately realize what I need to do to bet on myself. And the moment that you bet on yourself with your blessings, your energy, and your testimony is the moment everything changes. Is the moment that your life changes at home? Is the moment your life changes with your friends? Is the moment your life changes with God? Is the moment your life changes with your business? Is the moment your life changes with, most importantly, yourself?
And anybody watching this, this is not a show. Every single time Justin and I get together, something happens. It's electrical. We had a 2-hour lunch. You could feel the energy throughout this place in Miami. Anytime we get on the phone, it's over an hour. So welcome. Welcome, because this is what it's like every single time.
It's just amazing, because when you think about it, and for anybody listening, and you go, man, well, just like, I don't have any blessings. That's just not true. It's just not true. You're just not feeling them. You just haven't leaned into them. Well, I don't have the energy to do everything. No, you do have the energy, but where are you putting your energy towards that's not in accordance to your blessings, that's not in accordance to what he wants you to do, but rather it's what you want to be doing. And they're disguised as distractions. They're pulling you away. And what do you need to cut out? And that's where all of this like self-development crap that kind of goes out there, that puts all these curriculums together, but leaves out the key component of God in like the foundation that exists there. That's why you can't vision board yourself and find these changes. That's why you can't go through these 5 steps to find your core values or your key principles. That's why you can't go through this 2-day workshop to manifest the best life in the world. That's why you can't just go and watch The Secret and all of a sudden have this new breakthrough of a new life that is full, fulfilling, and realizing what actually exists. It's because it's cut out the core. They use all the biblical principles in their teaching, but yet they forget what it's all built upon. And so when you come back to this and you go, man, what are my blessings? What am I really good at? What am I being called towards? What am I being pulled into? Where am I putting my energy? Where am I driving it to? What have I gone through? Where am I like wasting it? Or where am I not having it being the most efficient use of that energy? And then thirdly, what have I gone through? What's my testimony? What's my story? What can I do that will relate to people? Just like Adam's talking about. No, you don't have to be the number one lace manufacturer in the world to be ultimately to have that same story. No, it's just the story of addiction. It's the story of addiction that can touch so many people, and being able to pull yourself out and now be able to execute and build a new business. It could be just that you drive the same car as somebody. It could be that you just live in the same town as somebody. It could be that you just had the same divorce as somebody else. All of these things are things that create testimony, that connect people. And the moment that you're able to lean into what that testimony is, that's you all of a sudden betting on yourself to go into a state of service, to come back, to be the Phil Jacksons of the world to somebody else so that you can ultimately allow them to realize their Michael Jordan time. But everybody comes full circle at some point to become back to be that teacher. And it can only happen if you're willing to bet on yourself and be teachable and coachable.
I'm fired up. Want to hit somebody?
Run through a brick wall.
Just to triple down on what you just said, Bill Wilson is the creator of the 12 steps that has helped so many people in alcoholism and addiction. And when he was creating them, he wanted, in the third step, you make a decision to turn your will and your life over the care of God as you understand him. When he was developing these steps, he was thinking about leaving the word God out because he wanted to speak to the masses. He didn't want to put, and his wife said exactly what you just said with the secret. Like, he's like, you're going to leave out the one thing that really saved you, you know? And it gave him the courage to be like, we're leaving it in.
And it's amazing when all of a sudden you put it back in his hands, how miracles happen. Like, I can't tell you, since being hyper aware of his presence and his callings and his discussion points, not just in my life, in my network's life, people that I've been around, people that I do life with, people that are on the same wavelength, businesses 100xing. We just had somebody this morning whose wife has been on, is getting treated on dialysis and her life is threatened. Literally at this moment, she's in. It gives me goosebumps at this moment, is in getting a kidney transplant from somebody who had the perfect measurement. The young person who had passed away had went under cardiac arrest, and that was the kidney that she needed in order to continue her life. And it's like, they have three kids, and it's amazing. It's like the miracles that you see every single day happening are not by accident. And you are not by accident. You listening to this are not by accident. The fact that this podcast is coming up is not happening by accident. And so I continue to encourage you and invite you to share this with somebody. I know you've got somebody on your heart right now as you're listening to this, that you need to share this with somebody. Somebody needs to hear this message. Somebody needs to hear this word. Somebody needs to be encouraged, motivated, inspired to be able to lean back and have this be their sign and wonder of, maybe I can do life differently. Maybe I can move in a different direction. Maybe I can question the way that I'm operating and bet on myself for the first time, because somebody bet on me first before I even knew how to walk, before I even knew how to talk, before I even knew why I was here. And that is amazing. The same power that brought Jesus back from the dead, the same power that resurrected human beings, the same power that parted the Red Sea, the same power that turned water to wine, the same power that fed thousands with three fish and a loaf of bread lives inside of you. That is just amazing to me, if you think back to that. And that is the world that we live in. And so when you bet on yourself for the first time for a lot of things and take ownership for those things, magic happens.
I'm in love with you. I don't know what to say. You know, before we even got to meet our dear friend, Matt Williams, I remember him saying, oh my God, I can't wait to see you and Justin. And like, that's how he worded it, you know, but it's this, I could listen to that for days.
And Matty Williams is, if you haven't listened to Matt's podcast, Wake Up the Sun podcast, another good one. I was on it the other day, and Matt's been on ours a few times. I think it's back in early 200 episodes. So if you go back probably 50 or 60 episodes, you'll find Matt Williams. But it's amazing how when you start operating in a network and with people who have similar like-minded beliefs, similar like-minded values, similar like-minded non-negotiables, similar like-minded desires and pursuits, how everything in your life just starts to go along this like-minded track. Somebody gave me this the other day. It was actually, you know who it was? It was John Gordon. I don't know if you've read any John Gordon's books. He's absolutely Energy Bus. Yeah, energy, absolutely yeah, no, incredible.
Phenomenal.
Guy's written 28 books, sold 18 million copies of, I don't know if you do the math on that, but he's okay at what he does. And but he talked about how when we're going down the road can become very hard. And when you're bowling, you got like those gutters that come out, like kind of the guardrail. So like you can throw your bowling ball and go bang, 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 but it's still going to hit the pins at the end of the day. If you take the guardrails off, you're not good at bowling. You're never going to get any pins down, or it's going to be like very inconsistent. Truth is very narrow, and truth keeps you on that path in life so that you stop deviating. You stop getting into the gutter. You stop getting into these places and having the inconsistencies. And that truth has to be reflected by the environment that you're in. And the moment that the truth starts to get wider, or it starts to disappear, is the moment that we start to get inconsistent in life, is the moment we start to get into the gutter, is the moment that we start to find ourselves in tough situations. And so making sure that the people that you're around, that the environment that you're in, that the value systems of the people that you're hanging out with, that the goals, the desires, the love that exists, the pursuits that you're on, are all in this state of truth, keep you on this narrow path that no matter how deviated you get, you just start bouncing back and forth, and you're going to make your way down and hit the pins at the end of the day. And it will save you so much heartache and so much movement. But again, it comes back to what you said, and I love this, is being teachable and coachable.
Can I add something to that?
Because 100%.
Some people, you know, they may look at Justin and myself and say, well, how? And a lot of the times it's not so sexy. It's your friend Matt Williams inviting you to a workout and his buddy Justin's going to be there. And it's just reorganizing your schedule to say yes. Or someone's going to invite you to church on Sunday.
Good one.
You know, you already have plans and you were thinking, like, so many people are like, well, how am I going to find that tribe? And how am I going to do this? And sometimes it's as simple as saying yes to something that you really just didn't want to do. And a relationship is born, a new path is hedged. You can't explain it. It's a divine destiny of some sort, but it's a matter of just being open and saying yes to some opportunities that you most likely are way more comfortable saying no in.
It's saying yes to different.
The different. Wow, that's good.
It's really good.
That's really good.
I wrote that down and circled that. Saying yes to different.
I love that.
For somebody that's so equipped in this space, what would you say your definition of ownership is?
Wow. Well, I can tell you what it was until I had an IG live with you the other day. And then you mentioned the four components of working with you as a coach, which I loved, I mean, I think yours is better is what I'm trying to say.
I want to know yours.
Yeah.
In a couple words or a phrase, what would you say your definition of ownership is?
That's a great question. My personal definition of ownership would be my God-given power to make a decision and to fulfill and to take the proper action for that decision. So my God-given power to make a decision and fulfill it would be my Adam Javlin, New Jersey, Rocky Balboa, chopped up definition of ownership.
I love it.
I made a lot of decisions on my own that are like terrible. Right. They're just terrible. I mean, like, so I like putting God given first. So therefore, I'm checking in with something higher and more, because when you know, you don't want me making a decision without doing that first. Trust me, it's going to be way off. And then the action, you know, a decision is just a decision until you take a little action to try to fulfill it.
Yeah, I love it. Guys, if you haven't noticed, when this guy talks, there's just something special about him. So if you're wanting to connect deeper and our audience is wanting to dive in deeper with you, Adam, where can people find out more about you and the Hero Project?
Yeah. So I'm at Adam Javlin on all social media outlets, right? Instagram, Facebook, it's at Adam Javlin. And I'm reachable. Like there's always, I'm very easy to find, and I'm always making an effort to get back to anybody within 24 hours.
I love it. So guys, as you go forwards, and kind of step into this. Again, I don't know if you're on the treadmill, if you're working out, if you're driving in your car, or if you're just sitting at home listening to this, but we have to realize we have to bet on ourselves. It all starts with betting on ourselves, with your blessings, with your energy, and your testimony, because it was already fulfilled for you. It was already created. It was something that was predetermined by a gifting that you have full access to. Becoming teachable, becoming coachable, and leaning into your God-given greatness, into that thing that you are meant to be world-class at, is how you ultimately change your life, is how you ultimately create that destiny that exists at your hands and at your feet. But oftentimes, it's just going to require you to say yes to different. Say yes to something that is outside of your comfort zone. Say yes to something that is a different routine that you typically do. Say yes to something that seems unfamiliar because you don't know, but every single thing in this life is happening for you, not to you, because he is preparing you for what he has prepared for you. And in order to get to that, different is created, because we know success is different. So own your different, and we'll see you guys next week.